I'll let that go again and I'll start again. So I appreciate everyone attending tonight. Welcome. This is the March meeting of Economic Development Planning, Education, Employment, Arts, and Agriculture Committee. What I'd like to do tonight, call the meeting to order first. And then what we'll do is our usual thing is to do the Pledge of the Flag. And I'll ask Legislator Litz to lead us in the Pledge of the Flag.
Sure.
I pledge allegiance
to
the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Legislator Litz.
You're welcome.
I will accept a motion to approve the minutes from our February 1st meeting.
Motion.
Second.
Legislator Hewitt, thank you very much. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And there are no abstentions. Okay, great. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Sorry, I have a caller at 845-750-7295. Can I get your name? I see a caller at 750-7295. Can I get your name?
Yes, Rebecca Martin.
Thank you.
Okay, so before we get into the presentation, let's have Laurent Rato from the Hudson Valley Film Commission give us a presentation. I requested that he come and visit our committee. I noticed that the last few years we haven't heard from the Hudson Valley Film Commission, and I think they're a vital part of our economy in the Valley, especially here in Ulster County. And I think it's important that we hear what they contribute and what their plans are and maybe ways that we can work together and help them. So, Mr. Rato, all yours. Thank you.
I appreciate the time and appreciate the opportunity. The Hudson Valley Film Commission is a 501c3 nonprofit organization with a mission to create economic development, pure and simple, through opportunities that by attracting, supporting, and promoting regional film and television production and related work. I'm going to read some of this. I apologize for that, but I'm used to speaking for 2 hours. We've spoken at libraries throughout the county. I'm going to try to keep this brief. I realize that I realize you all have a lot of work to do and you've had a very busy day. But hopefully we'll get back to speaking at libraries and town halls and schools. We've spoken in Kerhonkson, Gardner, Marlboro, New Paltz, Phoenicia, Saugerties, Woodstock. We work all over the county. We work all over the region. We work in 7 counties. 2021 was our most successful year for film and TV production. We had record numbers in direct spending, hotel room rentals, jobs, and more. I'm going to email a lot of this data to you. It was a very welcome bounce back from the pandemic, from the shutdown that occurred exactly about 2 years ago today, around March 15th. We were filming actually at the Woodstock Film Studios, which is actually in the town of Kingston on Route 28. And the day after, I remember it well, nobody was allowed to go to the productions anymore. Anyway, in short, the estimated local spending that we tabulated, and we're still tabulating, we're actually working with Warner Media to get details. $58 million was spent in the region. 42,686 room rentals we tracked. We actually call every single hotel every quarter to track the rooms, and we also reach out to the productions for that information. In terms of scouting days, there were 374 scouting days, which means that film scouts were staying in the region, eating in the region, and looking at for locations. We have a scout today right at Tech City. I was working getting him to Tech City today, hooking him up with Dan Ahouse and for a massive production in 2023 from Amazon Studios. Production days in 2021, there were 471 production days. Number of locations used was 264. Local crew hired, that's local crew members who live in the region, your neighbors, 631 people were hired on films. The production that's going on in Saugerties, the HBO production right now, has 250 people on crew. About a third of those people are hired locally. And these are people who pay local taxes. You know, they support the schools, they support the community, they work at the as volunteer firemen. They're the ones who are benefiting. It's the blue collar industry. These people work 14-hour days. We want them to be able to work in their backyard instead of having them go to New York City or other states where they used to find work. This is a new occurrence now that we have production year round. It's a fantastic development that's taken a long time to happen, and we want it to continue. I'm often asked what we do during the week, and I actually wrote about six pages, so I'm gonna email that to you. But as an example, today we worked on the Amazon production for 2023. That's off in the distance, but we worked with the New York City Department of Environmental Protection on that because we're looking for tunnels. Nobody knows about tunnels better than the New York City Department of Environmental Protection. This is all post-apocalyptic locations that we're looking for. So we're also talking to Iron Mountain, and we're talking to Tech City, which kind of looks like a post-apocalyptic place sometimes, depending on the building you're looking at. they were very excited to find out that they weren't looking for a brand new building. We're working with a Disney film right now. All of this work is very competitive, and you kind of have to know the insiders, the people, the producers, the people to talk with. I've been in the industry since 1980, so I it's amazing how many people I talk to who I've known for 20, 30, 40 years, and it helps enormously. The producer of the Disney film is someone I've known since 1999. We're competing with North Carolina on that film. Every time we work on a production, we're competing either with North Carolina or Georgia or Massachusetts or Connecticut or another part of New York. We're working on a film called The Bike Riders. We're actually competing against the Buffalo area on that one. We want them here because we want the jobs, we want the location fees, we want the vendors hired. The vendors are the caterers, the hotels, etc. Part of the dynamic that we have to deal with is the state dynamic. The New York film tax credit is very conservative. The only costs that are eligible are below the line costs, which are labor costs. We appreciate the fact that it's a conservative program, and that it doesn't that money doesn't go to above the line costs, which are the celebrities. But we lose films because of that. You know, we lost the movie Joy because Massachusetts was willing to pay a third of Jennifer Lawrence's $15 million salary. Is that right? No, but that's the kind of competition we're always up against. So we're always trying to figure out a way to show that a film can be made in our region for at a good value. So right now, North Carolina does give a tax credit across the board, below the line and above the line. So we have to figure it. We're working with the producer to show him why this region is the best region. Luckily, and this is true very often, luckily the producer happens to live in my backyard in Saugerties. And I've created a map of locations and a gallery of locations that are all about 15 miles from his house. And I think he really wants to be close to home. So there's always, you know, there are ways to make the area attractive, and you have to figure out exactly the way what that is. Another thing on Bike Riders, for example, the other movie, we've been referring a lot of local actors. And that's another way, if you can get a local actor to sign on to your film. So with bike riders, we happen to have some great bike riders in the area. We have Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who actually moved to this region because he loved biking so much. He did a movie called Peace, Love, and Misunderstanding in 2010. Absolutely fell in love with the area because he loved motorcycling around the area. So we got Jeffrey Dean Morgan, we got Norman Reedus, and then Bill Sage, who's up in Margaretville. So if we can get one of those actors tied in, and then, you know, that's a whole other way of getting a production here. So every time we work with a film, we're trying to figure out a way to make it as attractive as possible. The other thing we do is we promote a lot of things. So last week, I don't know if many of you may have received our blog, but we talked about some of the productions that are actually coming out. A lot of the productions that were filmed in 2021 are now on television, and that creates a whole other dynamic to film production. It's especially cultural tourism. Anytime somebody sees the Hudson Valley in a film, well, not every time, because sometimes, you know, we're supposed to be Oklahoma, or we're supposed to be Virginia, or we're supposed to be some other part. But very often people will know that a film was filmed here. And there are several films that have actually created what is called cultural tourism. People come to the area to see the bridge in a quiet place. That has become, you know, the Walk Hill Valley Rail Trail Bridge has become one of the most visited sites in the region. And there's some funny stories about that. I remember I was talking to, they wanted me to convince County Executive Mike Hine to delay renovation of that bridge because they liked the way it looked pretty and everything. And I remember I called Suzanne Holt and she said no in about 2.5 seconds, I think, because that renovation was definitely going to go forward. So we explained that their production designer should make the bridge look old and cruddy, which they did. And the fact that movies are on the screen, that creates a whole other dynamic, which brings this, it creates advertising. It's free advertising for the area. So last year we had some major TV shows. We had Sex Lives of College Girls, which is Mindy Kaling's new production. That was all filmed at Vassar. We recommended Vassar. We recommended Bard. We recommended a bunch of different universities. They chose to film at Vassar. They spent a fortune in the area. And that Mindy Kaling, you know, tweeted and Instagrammed about how she was in the area. And that's great for the area because people suddenly want to come to the Hudson Valley and vacation here or spend the weekend here. That happens on a lot of films. With Pretty Little Liars, the production that's going on in Sardis right now, the amount of people looking at on Instagram and all of the social media is unbelievable. So that's the whole promotion part. I'm going to just leave it at that. I'm going to send you all of the other information. I'd be delighted to answer any questions. I will say that, you know, our history with Ulster County was, I've lived in Ulster County since 1988. I've lived in about six towns in the Hudson Valley. I've lived in Pinebush. I lived in Shawangunk. Hope I pronounced that right. Willow. No. Shawangunk. Shawangunk. Willow, West Hurley, Woodstock. I now live in Sardis. I was able to buy a house before the prices went through the roof. I hope to be able to stay here. Again, we did have Ulster County IDA support. Al Ford embraced us in 2008. He understood the importance of this, and we had a great relationship, but it kind of fell apart under the leadership of Randall Leverett. I don't know what happened. We were saved basically by Mark Brownstein, the CEO of Marketech, one of the largest employers in the county, one of my best friends. Unfortunately passed away, which is horrifying, but he saved us. He basically supported us after the loss of funding. We used to get between $40,000 and $50,000 from Ulster County. We also were lucky enough to get support from Dutchess County and from Putnam County, and we used to have support from Orange County as well. We used to have a wonderful relationship with the IDEA. You know, I used to travel around to different counties with different members of the IDEA, and we convince all the other counties to come on board. Unfortunately, most of the wonderful people I worked with, Dave and Steve, they all passed. Steve Perfect, Dave O'Halloran, everybody that unfortunately passed away. You know, what do they say? The good die young. Or, anyway, so we do have a 2021 report. I'd be happy to share that with the appropriate member.
Fawn. You can send it to Fawn, and then Fawn will distribute it.
Okay. And again, I'm happy to discuss minute details going back to all the way to 2000 when we first started working with films. You know, it's a wonderful addition to the area. I can't think of another economic engine that brings in $58 million and hires people locally and keeps giving. The other thing is they don't come in here and build, you know, monstrosities and then leave them empty and leave. They actually come, rent stuff and leave and spend money. So it's been a wonderful experience. We have a directory online with hundreds, you know, probably thousands of local people who get hired off the site all the time. Mm-hmm. And we hope that Ulster County will come on board and continue supporting us.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate you taking your time. And we look forward to hearing from you soon again. And again, reach out to us if there's things that we can do to help. We can brainstorm maybe. You know, see what we can do. And we have the Department of Economic Development Director Tim Wiedemann on the phone, on the call with us. And I'm sure he'd love to hear from you. You know, just to let you know that I fully understand the value of the arts community as far as an economic driver in this county. It's really one of the top ones, and we know that. You know, I want to do what I can to help the arts community thrive in the county. And again, thank you very much for your time, and just whatever you want to get to us, please send to Fawn and we'll make sure everybody gets it. Thank you.
I did want to, can I just say one last thing? I love the arts, and I love everything about the arts, but for me, this is all about labor. I used to talk to Mike Hine about how this is like being a cobbler. It's like making shoes and then getting the shoes out. It's basically manufacturing. That's what this is. It's employing local laborers who work for very high salaries and creating mm-hmm. art. Yes, we're creating right. art, and then that's the part that we promote. But everything else is really labor intensive, mm-hmm. and I always want to drive that home because these people work 12, 14, 16 hour days.
Hardworking people. Yeah,
very hard work. Yep. Anyway, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Chairman Legislator Speary has her hand up. I don't know.
I was just going to say, if any of the legislators, we're only going to ask the legislators to ask if they have any questions to Mr. Rato. We don't allow the public to ask our guest questions during these meetings. Thank you.
Hi, Laurent. I don't have a question. I just want everybody to know how much I am grateful for the Hudson Valley Film Commission, especially for my students, you know, at SUNY New Paltz. Every year my students are coming through the program, and we require our students to do an internship before they graduate. And it's only been in the past 5 years that our students have been staying in the area, one, to do their internships, and then upon graduation, staying in the area to work. And I can't tell you how proud I am when I see my students working on these productions that he just mentioned and staying in the area and getting, joining the unions, the various unions that they need to be a part of to do the work that they're doing, rather than, you know, graduating and going and moving to New York City. It's just the Film Commission does so much for the students that are leaving me.
Well, that's you know, I hate to say, I don't hate to say this, but the fact is that I had three kids and one of them unfortunately passed away, but the other two moved away, and I didn't want anybody's kids to move away. That was one of my things. We wanted to create a system where young people would stay in the area. And that's actually happening. When I go to Upriver and I see all the kids from SUNY New Paltz, like Joe Davis and all these other it's like, it's the best. Like today I actually sent out a casting call, and I also sent out a job call. Somebody is hiring, they want a director, and they're offering $65,000. And I was like, oh, so I sent it out to all these other people, people who graduated from the New Paltz. Tomorrow we're going to be at Bard, speaking with the students at Bard, and we also work with Marist. So, you know, that's one of our passions, is to keep kids in the area and find jobs that will make them happy and content. You know, during when the White House Plumbers was filming down, they were filming everywhere. They filmed in Kingston. As you know, Cuba, you know, the Bay of Pigs happened at Kingston Point, right? Everybody knows that, right?
You know that.
So one of the great things about that is I went to the wardrobe department one day, and there was this, you know, this 20-year-old kid sitting behind the desk, and he found out that I was with the Film Commission, and he was like, oh, I can't believe that I get to work, you know, 10 miles from home. He was from Poughkeepsie. All he did was travel across the bridge to Newburgh and stuff like that. I love, that's the best. It's great. And it's also great, by the way, we did a show on Radio Kingston, the senior show. And it's the same thing with seniors. You know, we work with seniors all the time, especially when it comes to picture cars and acting, a lot of background actors. A lot of seniors have found a new passion working as background actors and providing picture cars and just getting involved. So it involves everything. Film and TV involves everything, because there's about 300 different types of jobs. You can be a secretary, you can be a caterer, you know, there's so many different positions. So it spans the whole narrative.
Well, thank you again. I don't mean to cut you off, but
sorry. Like I said, I can go on forever. Goodbye. Right.
By the way, my daughter graduated from film school and works in the insurance industry in Florida. So I wish you were around 15 years ago when she, you know, was getting into film school. Anyway, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Nice. So what I'll do now is I'll open up the floor for a public comment. Oh, wait, Legislator Hewitt, I'm sorry. I didn't see your hand. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Cahill. I just want to thank Legislator Sperry for her points. And I was going to add one point about the unions, but you hit it, that the training goes not only through high school, but into college and into union trainings. But I also wanted to mention a benefit that is often overlooked. And tonight we're talking about the difference between hotels and short-term rentals. The film industry brings amazing renters to our area, people who support families here, not second homeowners who are trying to profit quickly off of short-term rentals, but families who can now pay their bills because films come here and make their movies here. So I just wanted to make that quick point. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other legislators? I have to go between two screens here because we have quite a few people, 37 people on the call tonight. Okay, great. So what I'm going to do now is open up the floor for public comment on the agenda items. I'll just say that, you know, when we get to the home rule request that is on there, resolution number 11, that the folks that are going to be responding to that. I noticed there's quite a few of you on the call. If you could please keep your comments to like 2 or 3 minutes apiece, that would be very much appreciated. I think we know where you're coming from. You've spoken with Legislator Maloney. I've spoken to a couple of people, exchanged emails, et cetera. So, I mean, of course, you're welcome to talk to any of us at any time. But for tonight, since there's so many of you on the call, I really would appreciate it if you could be a little bit concise with your comments. Okay. Thank you. So anyone have any comments on the resolutions? If one, I'm going to ask for your help here.
If the folks on the phone want to make a comment, if you unmute yourself, I will be able to see you've unmuted and I can let the chairman know.
Okay, great. And then, so there's also folks that said they wanted to talk about resolution number 108, which is a couple people have mentioned they did. So if anyone wants to comment on that at this point, feel free, let Fawn know if you're on the phone. Otherwise, raise your hand, give some indication. Okay, I see Catherine, you wanted to speak. Go ahead, feel free.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cahill. Sorry, I had my phone on. Thank you, Mr. Cahill. Yes, from what I understand, the pilot is probably an inappropriate thing to be having. As I understand it, TDI, the Champlain Hudson Power Express, will be in the area for a very brief while. So it's not as though they're developing the area. And overall, once the project is complete, I understand there will be 26 paid positions overall. And there's nothing that says they're going to be in Ulster County. So the way I understand what a pilot actually is, payment in lieu of taxes and how it works, this is an inappropriate situation, and Blackstone should not be receiving that situation, should not be receiving taxes in lieu of payment in lieu of taxes. And just a word, if I may, I won't take too long. I just want to say that the Hudson River is a precious jewel to all of us. And there are 7 communities, including yourselves, communities amongst yourselves, that gets you drinking water from the Hudson River. Now, if this jet plowing to dig the tunnels to lay the cables would be stirring up PCBs left over from GE and other toxins that would not be able to be filtered out. So I'm wondering if that money, how much water would that supply? If the water is no longer able to serve as drinking water for the communities, you know, how much money that you would be getting, how much water would that buy for you? And any of the communities along the Hudson, it's a big, big concern of mine. I paddled down the Hudson with the two-row wampum in 2013 and from Beacon to New York City, and I gained a tremendous appreciation for this beautiful river. And I'm aware of some of its life, the Atlantic sturgeon and some of the other fish, some of whom are coming back right now, some of the species. So I think it's our job to preserve the beauty that we have and to preserve the life that we have. And so many people have been working so hard to bring the Hudson back. I think it behooves everyone to do what we can to preserve the river and not destroy it. And just one more word, and that is that New York State has several renewable energy projects where the money and the jobs for this renewable energy would stay in New York State. Why should we be exporting our energy dollars to another country? So I just urge you and I applaud you for denying the transmission developers. And I applaud you and support you and do anything and everything I can to support this decision. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Anyone else, Sarah?
Mr. Chairman, I'm just going to interrupt one moment. I have a caller at 718-636-6709. May I get your name?
Hello, I'm Annie Wilson. I just managed to get on the call to listen to your meeting tonight.
Thank you, Annie.
And if I have comments regarding the matter of, as discussed by the person before me. I do have a few thoughts on that, and I would ask that this legislature support the resolution and oppose the transmission cables to be installed under the Hudson River. And we must protect rivers everywhere, including the rivers up in First Nations lands in Canada. So, by the way, the long-term for the decommissioning of these cables is to abandon them in the river. And I really think that people need to think about the legacy of leaving these cables buried in the river in perpetuity. Thank you.
Chairman, you're muted.
Yeah, I see that. Thank you. Is there any other comments? I was going to ask Laura before I go to you. I was going to ask if the sponsor wanted to make any comments, Legislator Erner, and then Laura, we can come to you. Is that okay with you?
Thank you.
Legislator Erner, would you like to just, you know, give us a brief background of why you submitted this and some of the, you know, the intent of what this resolution is for the folks that are here? Thank you.
Okay, I just unfroze. Thank you, Chair Cahill. We were approached in the Energy Environment Committee last month by a group of Ulster County residents and organizations, including folks from my district, and including the organization Riverkeeper. This is actually an issue that I have personally followed for about a decade. And basically, if you look at the text of the resolution, we're basically asking the Industrial Development Agency to go through with the decision that they seemed inclined to make when they considered this matter a few months ago, and that is to deny payment in lieu of taxes. They, at the time, doubted that there would be any corresponding economic benefit to our county in granting that. The anticipated tax revenue for the project normally would have been over $90 million, and the pilot would have reduced what we received to about $29 million. The resolution then goes on to cite various other reasons that our neighbors here in the county, organizations here, the Hudson Seven, as we heard about, and then various First Nations located in the proximity of the dam, which has been constructed in Quebec, and then all the way up and down, and even in organizations in New York City, where the power would ultimately be delivered and consumed, also in opposition. So we have a number of justifications that we provide, but our ask in this memorializing resolution is simply that the pilot be denied. We are, however, also interested in seeing, as many of the folks here have also indicated, whether the project could be stopped entirely. But for now, just asking USITA to deny that pilot would be the best course of action for our county, we believe. So thank you.
IDA, by the way, not USITA. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Yes, UCIDA, exactly.
Thank you. Legislator Petit.
Thank you, Legislator Cahill. Yes, this project that is proposed above and beyond the resolution in front of you has absolutely or little positive economic impact in our community in Ulster County. It may provide a couple of temporary jobs, but for the most part, it's very specialized jobs, so they're going to have to hire outside of the county. I mean, if anything, when you have a project of this magnitude going in, you generally offer the community a host community benefit. You don't ask them for millions of dollars in tax dollars as a give back. The Esopus drinking water, it's within 50 to 100 feet of our intake. The representatives are claiming that it's only going to be a 3 to 4 day inconvenience. Meanwhile, we have water infrastructure that we've been trying to work on for years, and our holding tank can only hold so much. If something awful happens, we won't have the capacity to draw water to put out a fire or respond to an emergency. Besides that, it's a sensitive ecosystem that we've been trying to repair decades of damage to along the Hudson. As the previous speaker said, we have sturgeon coming back, but I just heard that the stripers are now being more heavily regulated because they're starting to decline. And I had a special treat this weekend. I got to see not one, but two eagles. So, life is coming back. The last thing that we want to do is give a large corporation a gift of millions of dollars to come back and interrupt our community. And again, no benefit. This power line is going down in New York City, so we don't even see any power coming from it. So, yes, I am a adamant advocate for the passage of this resolution.
Thank you, Legislator Petit. I see a Lee, correct me if I'm wrong, Gao, is that how you say that?
It's Gao, thank you.
Oh, okay, all right, I tried, thank you.
Yeah, I want to thank Laura and Phil and all the other speakers who have also supported the Resolution 108, which I want to do. I live in the town of Esopus, and I have been following the CHIPI project out of personal environmental interest. And I also have been following the Hudson 7 meetings. And one of the pieces of information that I garnered from those meetings is that the Hudson 7, in an attempt to protect the drinking water of the seven municipalities who were affected, are planning to let this CHIPI, TDI, Blackstone, Hydro-Québec, what the conglomeration of companies involved, test their own water impacts. And one has to wonder about the conflict of interest there. Would you trust the people polluting your water to do the testing? And I want people to ponder that question and also ponder the liabilities that could come to anyone who agrees to that. And it could involve harm to the communities beyond the manifest harms to our water supply. And other people have connected the dots with all the environmental issues. And there's just one more I want to bring up, which is that the maritime industries have objected. And these are communities that really are communities that have a sense of pride and history in the maritime communities. They have objected to this because they have been told that if they hit a cable, which is very, very possible, that they will be liable to fix the cable. And that's in addition to the danger that hitting a high voltage cable would pose to the river beyond the EMF frequency dangers. So I applaud you for hopefully approving this resolution. And I also want to second that it's my great hope that we consider as a community the other options that are on the table that are far less harmful and that are truly renewable and clean. Clean path is one, and also more public ownership of the utilities, which have already.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for your comments. There's other folks that would like to speak, and we do want to kind of limit the amount of time. Legislator Maloney, you're up.
Yes, real quick. One of the things you look at, or the IDA is supposed to look at, is whether a project is going to happen without these tax benefits. Obviously, they don't need this for this project. It's a bizarre request, but I guess it's worth a shot in their mind. Our IDA has proved to be willing to literally violate state municipal law to give undeserving pilots that are way outside of the bounds that they're supposed to stay in. But with regards to this, of course, I'm for it. though it is, it's almost a bizarre request. It's so out there. So I'd be shocked if it wasn't dead on arrival. And I think it's another thing for us all to keep in mind with when it comes to New York City and how we our people up here are constantly getting the short end of the stick from turbidity to more of our tax dollars going down there than coming up here. Many other watershed problems, and it's just another frustrating reality to live a couple hours from New York City, and it doesn't benefit us all that often.
Thank you, Legislator Maloney. I think we have Jacqueline Brechler. Would you like to make a comment?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, hello. This is Jacqueline Brechler. I actually live in Rockland County, New York, just downstream away. And I certainly also applaud the potential to not allow the use of IDA money for this project. You know, as far as I can understand, IDA money is to bring long-term businesses into communities where people are actually living in their communities and growing their businesses, not just trenching a line with part-time jobs. And so there's so many dangers to the Hudson River, particularly, you know, regarding EMF and also the maritime community. That trench actually is supposed to be technically maybe to a 14-foot depth. And so this company only wants to go through the 7-foot depth. And this is it's not appropriate. It's not deep enough. And of course, the deeper you go, the more damage there is. So it just shows that this whole thing is totally inappropriate, especially as Ms. Wilson said that they're going to just abandon the cable when this whole thing comes to the end. So, you know, I've been fighting actually this Chippy project for the last 10 years myself. And I was so shocked to hear that the water quality could be affected up in your area. You know, we also have Indian Point. We fought against the desalination plant in Rockland County that Suez wanted to do. And part of the reason that we won against that fight was because of the radioactive water that is still leaks from under Indian Point. And this is the river that flows two ways. It was shown that the radionuclides could not be taken out of the water. So there's also that issue on top of it all. And I just do feel that a massive company that's worth $649 billion has no right to ask in any community for IDA money, which is taxpayer money. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much. And I'll ask if you're done commenting to please mute your phones or your computers or devices, whatever you have there. I don't see any other comments right now. And so just to, if everyone doesn't mind, I'll move this resolution now I'll accept a motion for discussion or a vote at this time for resolution 108. So the folks that are on the phone can go about their business if they'd like to.
I'll make a motion to vote.
You make a motion to vote. We have a second?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, is there any discussion on this? Okay, all those in favor of resolution 108, please say aye.
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 All opposed? Are there any abstentions? Okay, so it unanimously passes. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. This will now go on to the full legislature for a vote at our next monthly meeting. Thank you for participating. Appreciate it. So now we'll go on to resolution number 11, which is request an enactment of a Senate bill and assembly bill in the New York State Legislature for a special law in relation to motel and motel room occupancy tax rates in Ulster County. I'll accept a motion for discussion.
I'll make a motion.
Okay, and I'll second that myself. Legislator Maloney, would you like to fill us in on where we are with this and some of your opinions on it?
Yeah, before I get started, we were at 6 and 10%. I was going to make a motion to amend down to 8%, 4%, 8% short-term rental, 4%. I got some feedback both from the Lodging Coalition and my fellow legislators that they'd be a little more comfortable if it didn't have, the 10% number. I like to start off big and negotiate from there. But if I could get a second and a vote on that, I'd like to move it down to 8-4.
Well, I'll make that motion to accept the amendment. Okay, all those in favor? Oh, sorry, Legislator Cantillo. I'm sorry, Legislator Clerk Cantillo.
Who is the second? I'm sorry.
Pete Criswell. Okay, all those in favor of amending the resolution as Legislator Maloney described? Aye. Opposed? Any abstentions? No. Okay, so it's been amended. Legislator Maloney.
Okay. So I sat down. I think it's important. We have a very strong lodging coalition, partially because we have a lot of lodging compared to other counties with our population and size. We have more all-inclusives. My last term dealing with the Airbnb agreement, I really wanted to do a better job of getting them information early. There were some emails that went out that I thought were kind of incorrect that I had seen other legislators getting with what this resolution was going to do and what our overall thought process was, the legislators that I was working with and talking with. So I went and sat down with several members of the Lodging Coalition a couple of weeks ago, and I tried to be just brutally honest about where we were and where I was. I can't always speak for other legislators. I kind of let them know where I thought other legislators were at, but we're a body. I kind of feel like the all-inclusives are where I'm at. They're going to end up being happier. You know, I think the Lodging Coalition has 60 members, the county has 200,000 residents that I'm thinking about first and foremost, and you can't make everybody happy. So I think it's important we have a conversation, continue a conversation. I'll be talking to one of our legislative attorneys again tomorrow about two things. One of them is getting a resolution ready that makes makes it a little easier for all inclusives to not pay 2% on everything. And I don't think that was the intent. The law we have is very confusing. I think it's hard for their accountants to use. So we'll be talking about that. I personally feel that the hotel motel is less important to me than short-term rental, but a lot of other legislators I've talked to really think that we're low. There's 38 other counties in New York State that are higher than us at 2%, virtually everybody surrounding us. So that will be part, and I was honest, that will be part of the discussion. And I actually think the short-term rental has literally put our housing crisis on steroids. I just heard someone say before that, isn't it great when we have the filming industry is great and it's great when people come in and stay in these Airbnbs. Well, those Airbnbs are there because people were booted out of their rentals many times. And there are far more houses and apartments being Airbnb'd, not that story of the one bedroom, which by the way, is not affected. None of these Airbnbs are probably going to be all that affected. Just by raising it from 2 to 4, 2 to 6, or 2 to 8. If you're getting $80 for a room, you know, now you're getting, you know, you're paying 88 instead of 81.50. I mean, it's not going to kill anybody. It's not going to stop anyone from, dealing with our horrible taxes. And it's a tax like no other. I just wrote a letter to the editor about putting $34 million back onto the tax rolls. I want to lower taxes, but this is a tax like no other. Because it doesn't tax people that live in this county. It taxes, for the most part, very fluent people that are staying here and exacerbating our housing crisis. With that money, we can go and attack that housing crisis. But just a reminder to everyone, this doesn't do anything but give us the right to then have real conversations about where we want to be. We could end up getting the right to do it and do nothing. It doesn't force us into anything. It doesn't make us more likely to do anything. It is impossible for us to do anything and silly to even have the conversation until this is put through. So this is not nearly as important as it has been made out to be, I think, and worried some people. But I want to continue talking to Lodging Coalition. I'd rather bring them in to a possible special meeting. I really wanted to get information to the Lodging Coalition early on, and I feel like after a couple of hours, I really put forth exactly where I was at, and the legislators that I had talked to where they seemed to be at. So to let them know that I want them to be their opinions to be heard. And I do think it's important. They really are employers in this county, especially the all inclusives. when you see what they do, when you see the amount of people that are working there, when you see the real tourism that's coming in, it really is something that's going to be a part of this, making those all-inclusives a little fairer. But hotel, motel, short-term rental may not be as happy, but it is what it is, and we're going to hear everybody out. I really hope we vote on it. I want to vote tonight. Petition to discharge is 5 signatures. If we don't get it through committee, I have a feeling we're going to be talking and voting on this very soon. If anyone else has any questions or comments, I'd love to hear them.
Thank you. So are there any legislators that would also like to comment on resolution number 11? Anybody? Okay, so then I'll call for the Chris.
Chairman, sorry. Yeah, Thomas Corcoran has his hand up.
Okay, sorry. I'm just having trouble.
Yeah.
I think we had Legislator Hewitt, then Corcoran, and then Legislator Nolan. We're going to let the legislators on the committee speak first.
Chairman Cahill, and thank you, Legislator Maloney, for your hard work on this resolution. I think that I understand the need to change the rates. You have wonderful points, and I think your research helps me be supportive because, like you said, the tenants, the vacationers, they don't see this increase. But I want to be careful about how we increase our rates and who we increase our rates on. It's easy to vilify and blame short-term rental owners for the fact that our area has become highly popular. Hotels are also seeing the benefit and increase in travel rates to our area, and so I understand the need to increase their rates as well. One thing we don't think about sometimes is when people make environmental choices, like traveling in your car or on the train, especially instead of an airplane, that changes our area because we're next to one of the largest cities in the world. We're going to become more popular as people become more environmentally friendly. As staycations become more popular, we're going to be more popular. And when prestigious publications talk about us, we become more popular. Let's not blame short-term rental owners because it's not people booting out other people. It's about accessory dwellings and maximizing on the homes we have and the outbuildings that we have so that families like me and people I know who have short-term rentals, I used to have one but no longer have one, so that I could speak on behalf of my constituents and support the families who are now able to pay their bills, catch up on bills, and finally save money, something young families don't do anymore. So we are actually catching up because of short-term rentals. So let's think about how to reward short-term rental owners, make rules that benefit the locals over the second homeowners who are from outside of our area. Let's make those rates higher maybe, or define what the rules are around second home ownership versus an accessory dwelling. And what's wonderful is the town of Rochester spent 4 years on this, on short-term rental rules. We've learned a lot, and we can now learn from Mike Baden and Aaron and Allen and people who see that these issues are complicated. And so I'll wrap it up by saying, I think there are solutions. We should promote short-term rentals. We should make rules that benefit locals, and we should think more deeply and meet with hotels and short-term rental owners to see what they think the rates should be, and they should be increased. Thank you.
So I have Legislator Nolan, and then I don't think there's anyone else after that. So go ahead, Legislator Nolan.
Thank you, Chair Cahill. But Legislator Cochran, who's on the committee, had his physical hand up before I.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I forgot that, Tom. I apologize.
No worries, Brian. So Legislator Maloney, I appreciate all the hard work you've done on this also. My quick question is on the all-inclusives. That's where I see the occupancy tax really hurting our all-inclusives, where they're getting taxed on food, entertainment, horseback riding. So there's an avenue and discussion in here about kind of reducing that off of the total package, correct? Because occupancy tax should be based on occupancy alone, and the all-inclusives have been getting hurt for years on this.
I agree 100%, and there's different ways to possibly go about it, but it's going to be a lot of legal questions and then budgetary questions. But I do believe at the very least there's a simple way at some point we could just pass a resolution that basically says you only pay 20% of what your total bill is. But I want to do even better than that. But no, these all-inclusives, and they offer so much. And you're paying one, and they really, it's good for their business. I think there's only three or four, but I do think it's important that we make it fairer for them. And I've talked to them, I've talked to at least two of them about it. And it's really good for their business to just charge you one price. They really don't want to break things down. They should be able to do that. And we should be able to come up with a formula that's fair, that not anybody's going to be able to, you know, a hotel's not going to be able to back in to call themselves an all-inclusive. So we have to define what an all-inclusive is, which I think we can easily do, and then get it down to where it's far, far less. And so I really believe the all-inclusives, after we're done with this conversation in the next couple of months, we're going to be able to make them a whole and in a much better position. And I agree with you 100%, and they shouldn't be. What they're offering, it was not meant to be. They are not meant to be paying the full bed tax on that entire bill.
All right. I appreciate that, because I do have one Buttermilk Falls in my municipality, yep. and basically Rockin' Horse is a stone throw right off my property yep. line. So I'm right there with Rockin' Horse also. So I appreciate that. Thank you. That answers my question.
Legislator Criswell.
Thank you, Chair Cahill. I just wanted to emphasize something that Legislator Maloney said before, that what we're voting on tonight actually isn't all these details. What we're voting on tonight is opening the door to allow us to have these conversations and to actually make decisions. So that's what we're voting on tonight. We will get to all these details later, but I just want to keep us focused on what we're actually voting on this evening.
Right. Legislator Litz.
Well, it seems like there's a lot of this is what we're going to do, that was what we're going to do, let's do the details later, let's do this, let's do that. I'll make a motion to postpone this until we can get it codified a little more into something that looks more like a resolution that we'll be happy with. I don't like making a lot of changes after we vote on the resolution.
Legislator Maloney.
There's not a lot to it. The all-inclusive part is going to be a separate resolution. The other part, there's two numbers. It's going to be 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, or 8, depending on whether we're talking hotel, motel, or short-term rental. It's two very simple numbers. If I came here with what I wanted to do, I'm one person. I need 11 other votes, possibly 16, though I don't think this would be vetoed. So if I came here and said, this is the way it is, everybody would go, wait a minute. We don't even have permission yet from the state to even do this, and you're coming at us with what you want to do. We get permission, and then the Republican and Democratic caucus decide two simple numbers, and then we put it up to vote on. I don't have any desire. I have postponed many things already this year and happily postponed them. I don't think this is something that is anything postponable or needing to be postponed. This is to get permission so we can have that, you know, month or two long conversation, and then decide where the 23-member body wants to be on two numbers.
Let's figure it.
Mr. Chairman, you need a second to postpone before you have the discussion.
Thank you. Is there a second to postpone? Okay, I don't see a second, Legislator Litz. Legislator Litz, go ahead.
Well, I mean, the resolution does, you know, put percentages in there. 4, 8, that's the amendment. And when we send this request up, the home rule might come back with percentages in it, which now we're going to live with those percentages without any future discussion. I think it's being kind of, you know, premature. I think we need to flesh this out a little more.
If I could just real quick, it's not to exceed.
Right. So that's what I was going to
say. So it's giving us that room to go and then decide. So it's not specific.
What happens if the legislature, when they enact it in Albany, which is not in our legislature, says 4 and 8 or 6 and 10?
Well, we ask when we present a home rule request to Albany, we present it. We ask them to do what we need them to do, what we want them to do. We're not going to ask them to alter it or do anything to it that would prevent us from enacting the law that we want to do locally here. And if they do that, then guess what? We have the option of not doing anything, right? This just enables us to have a discussion about increasing those taxes. It's all it does, right? And we may or may not act on it. It's that simple, right?
Do we have to put numbers in? I mean, we're asking to change.
I think you do have to put numbers in, right? You do have to put numbers in, Legislator Maloney?
I'm under the impression that they're going to want to see something. They could potentially send it back and say, because this is open-ended. Talking to Chris Rigucci, he doesn't believe that there's a time limit on this, that this gives us the right, you know, it could be next term that they finally decide what it is they want to do, but the first thing we have to do is get the right. If the state legislature just saw something and said, hey, we're going to we may raise the bed tax, give us permission, that they would probably send back if we didn't put some parameters on there and say, wait a minute, what are you going to 25? We're not going to say okay to that. So this is the way it's done.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and the other part of this that we have to consider too is that we're asking a legislature on March 1st to introduce something that they haven't considered yet. It's not on their docket right now. And raising taxes is not something the state legislature is going to want to do in an election year. I'm just going to throw that out there, you know. So this probably may not even be acted on in this legislative session. You know, there's that likelihood. You know, we've had experiences with tax home rule tax requests being delayed in Albany before, some of you might recall. And, you know, I think that, you know, it's always that possibility, right? But for me, I think it's important that we have the ability to start the conversation. And, you know, I think that we should, you know, go ahead and give the rest of the legislature an opportunity to speak on this and, you know, put in their 2 cents on whether or not they think it should go to the state for a home rule request. That's my opinion. Legislator Nolan, you've had your hand up for a while. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Cahill. I've talked to some of the property owners in the county and in my district, and this just seems like the wrong time to be doing this, especially to motel hotels. They were able to stay close to where they have been in the past with a lot of increased tourism from outdoor recreation during 20 and 2021. But it was a hard time. They've lost staff. They've lost income. And during that time, because our outdoor recreation tourism stayed strong and the hotels did stay open and managed to accommodate them, they saved us. The income tax revenue that we are using to fund other things, aside from the ARP monies, is a large percentage, more than half, is coming from the tourism industry. So we've got a goose laying the golden egg situation here. And the things that we've heard from the Film Commission and that we're hearing from the outdoor recreation community, these are economic drivers that have proven successful, and they've done it with what we've done with our bed tax. It is absolutely true that nobody says, is my bed tax going to be $2 or is it going to be $3.50? But they do ask what the price of the room is. And that bed tax is included in that. So if it's $89 or it's $91.50, that may make a difference. We, Ulster County, are competing with and successfully competing with Dutchess County. Many, many more times the people and the staff for tourism and the investments in tourism, but we've kept even with them and then went ahead of them with a strategy of portraying the Catskills as the family-centered, a little more affordable, and the bed tax is part of that. So I'm very concerned with people who have not done economic development work coming in and saying, well, this is how we would do it better. And I also don't understand the argument about that we need this, you know, the state to tell us we can talk about this. We can talk about it. We can talk about it 3 to 4 years ago and decided not to ask for this. Mm-hmm. So I think rather than put in a lot of effort and tell state representatives that we want something when we haven't sorted it out, I think we really need to sort out short-term rentals with homeowner occupied versus a non-homeowner occupied short-term rentals and deal with that separately. Deal with the all-inclusives and maybe make some improvements there. And we probably need the state to allow us to do that. That there might be some consensus building initiatives here. Why not pull those out and then go after it. And then we can make our case to the state. Right now, I wouldn't even know what we're asking for. I mean, not to exceed numbers, allow us to do great harm to the motel and hotel industry that is already struggling. And I think that, you know, there is a way to have these conversations that is collaborative. I do not believe that's been done yet. So I think the motion to postpone was a generous one.
Thank you.
And I would encourage people who do vote on it, if you're going to a vote tonight, to vote against this and then go, let's all together go do the work of what do we want to do in terms of economic development in this realm.
Thank you, Legislator Nolan. Any other comments from the legislature?
I'll call the vote, Chair.
Thank you. And so we're going to vote on 108 as amended by Legislator Maloney. All those in favor of resolution number 108?
Resolution 11.
Number 11. Sorry, we did 108. Sorry. Resolution number 11. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Just give me a minute. So I've got Cahill, Maloney, Speary, Hewitt.
Criswell. And all those opposed?
Opposed.
We have Herb and Tom. Did you guys vote? Sorry, I missed it.
I think I'm going to abstain. I don't have enough information. You want to, you know, throw this and throw that and throw something else. But
I don't think you can abstain.
You can abstain. You can vote no because you don't have enough information.
Well, then I guess you're forcing me to vote no.
Legislator Corcoran.
I'm a no.
Okay, thank you. So the resolution passes. Okay, we're going to move on to resolution number 29, another fun topic of the evening. Funding capital project number 601, ARP Small Business and Economic Development Recovery for the Department of Finance. Accept a motion for discussion.
I'll move it for discussion.
Second.
Second.
Okay. So any discussion on resolution number 29?
I'd like to, Chairman Cahill, if I may.
Yep. So go ahead.
I just wanted to mention that I hope everybody got the ARPA resolution scorecard that the ARPA committee created. So every committee member scored this project, and that score was compiled and that was sent to everybody on this committee with notes. And I just want to say it was a bit of a complicated conversation. It did pass the committee, but I just hope that everybody took the time to read all the comments and read the eventual scores. Thank you.
Thank you, Legislator Criswell. Are there any other comments or discussion on this? Legislator Maloney.
Does this have the $50,000 going to the EDA and then there was another $100,000 in advertising and other costs?
I see Director Wiedemann nodding his head yes. And if you guys want to direct questions to Tim for specifics, I'll allow
that's
that.
That's just a yes. That's a yes or no.
I think right. He said.
So, you know, I really have issues. We had issues in this county years ago with the EDA to the point where when we had the executive staff, supplying all the staff at the IDA, they were constantly funneling money over to the EDA. You know, most of the time our IDA can do what we have the EDA doing. And I really think we have to have some open, honest conversations sometimes about how much we want this EDA doing when it's one person controlling it. There's a reason, and I'll circle back around to what I'm going to propose in a second. There's a reason that the IDA is chosen by a body and not one person. It's dangerous not to have it set up that way. So the EDA to me a lot of times ends up being a go around. I personally think that that we should probably create an EDA that's appointed by the legislature, since we can't just dissolve it, but we could put it dormant. I've talked to some people, it makes sense. But it got to a point where the executives people that were working at the IDA were constantly funneling money over to the EDA, and it was kind of exposed and stopped. I don't like this $50,000. We just hired three people to do ARPA funds, even though most of the time when we're talking about these projects coming from the executive, we're talking to Tim Lederman, Chris Kelly, and Mark Ryder. Even though we have these three staff, that job is ARPA. We spent $1 million. The ARPA money is going to be out in a couple of months. I don't know what these individuals are going to be doing. And I mean, I know there's some treasury reports and things, but that's nothing to justify three positions. I think we made a mistake. I'm just going to be honest. And I don't think we should be sending this $50,000 over to the EDA. It's a way to get tax dollars over to the EDA, to me and to a lot of other people. And I'd like to amend that out of it, put it back into the project. I don't think we need to give the EDA any money here. Our county appointees, they're well paid. They seem to be doing all the work. You can't justify to me that the EDA should be getting it. I'll make a motion to take that $50,000 and put it into the program itself. If I could get a second and a vote, I'd love it.
So I'm just trying to get to the resolution so I can see where it specifically states the quantity of money going into.
Is it, am I right with $50,000?
I'm going to check right now. Tim, is that correct? Tim,
that's in the contract. That's actually subject to a separate resolution, I believe. I bring the agenda up just to make sure I'm clear on this. But 29 is actually the funding of the capital project. And so the amounts of that $1 million being broken down into $850,000 for direct assistance to businesses, $100,000 for program related expenses, and $50,000 for admin is actually in the contract. That's the subject of resolution 32.
So you're certain that it would be, the vote would be there. Can we get some, I don't mind making the motion in a moment on 32. Can we make certain that that's correct? I'm not saying it's not correct. It probably is.
That's what's in the backup.
It's in the resolution.
Okay. So I'll hold that back. Remember that spiel, and then I'll make a motion, see if I can get a second there, but I really hope everyone considers it. I don't think we need to send $50,000 over to the EDA. Give it to some businesses.
Okay, is there any other discussion on resolution number 29? Legislator Huey.
You're on mute, Legislator Huey.
Oh, thank you. Yes, Tim, I just want to make a recommendation or a suggestion. I know some of the money was also meant to be spent on promotion and marketing, and we've already identified a lot of, like you said, a lot of businesses that could use this funding. So I would recommend that our local publishers have been hit very hard in the last 2 years, and they don't talk about it because they're proud. But I'll just name a few publications in the area that have suffered. I know as a publisher of Livelihood, I lost 95% of my advertisers in March 2020, and Kingston Times no longer is in print after 50 years of publishing. Chronogram is still in print. HB Parent went out of print recently. Organic Hudson Valley went out of business recently. Bluestone Press is still printing. Chuangunk Journal still printing. Visit Vortex still printing. But all of these are friends of mine, and they're all struggling financially. And the Kingston Wire is a wonderful publication that keeps us informed. I wouldn't mention the Freeman because they're not local. They're owned by a Canadian company. But these people have struggled through COVID as well, and maybe you can use some of this money to support local publishers. Thank you.
Okay, any other comments on resolution number 29? If not, I will call the vote. Okay, all those in favor of resolution 29? Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Opposed.
That was just one opposed?
As far as I can tell, yes. Legislator Maloney. Okay, so then we'll move on to resolution number 32, which is approving the execution of a contract for $1 million entered into by the county, Ulster County Economic Development Alliance, for the Department of Finance. And I'll accept the motion for discussion.
Motion.
All right, second.
I'm sorry, who was the second? Criswell?
Yep. Oh. Maloney.
Maloney?
Thank
possibly.
You. Yeah. Any discussion? Legislator Maloney, want to make your amendment?
Yeah, I'll make the amendment to take the $50,000 and give it to the businesses and let Mr. Wiederman and the rest of the county people that are working on this continue to do the administrative work that they are already doing and will be doing.
So I just want to make sure that we have this correct. So you're suggesting to take the $50,000 in schedule, is it in Schedule A, for administrative costs and put it directly into the program? Okay. Tim, you got that? You understand what you're saying?
And to make the $850,000 for direct assistance to businesses?
$900,000. Right. Okay, so that's the amendment. Okay, we have a second on that amendment.
May I ask a question directly to Mr. Wiedemann at this point?
Well, I think
we're hearing this.
Yeah. Is this on the amendment, Peter?
Yes, it is.
Okay, go ahead.
So we grilled you hard in ARPA, and one of the things we grilled you on was this exact $150,000. And you repeatedly said that the previous grants that you made, not grants, but payments that you made were increased because you found that you actually didn't need the excess money for the advertising and for the overhead. Could you just speak to that a little bit?
Sure. So appreciate the question, Legislator Criswell. And the point that I was making is that in the first round, which was $1 million of funding from the state broken out in equal buckets to this proposal, $850,000 for direct financial assistance, $100,000 for program delivery, and $50,000 for administrative. We determined and consulted with the state and received state approval to move the $100,000 that was earmarked for promotion and marketing to the direct financial assistance because we already had applications almost immediately in excess of the funding that was allowed. So there was no additional effort to do marketing and promotion after that first push. The administrative was still retained as administrative overhead costs. And so as opposed to the proposed amendment here, the amendment here would move the administrative into the direct assistance to financial assistance to businesses.
Thank you.
And I would maybe just add to that, you know, there is an administrative cost to delivering this program. And, you know, while I understand and appreciate Legislator Maloney's point, I would also, you know, remind you all that this would be an additional administrative burden to someone. If it's not to USITA, it would be to our department in administering this on behalf of USITA. And so there is a cost there. I just want that to be clear.
Legislator Maloney.
Thing like a time cost to somebody that's in the county. Can you just give me some logistics, what the person's name is at the EDA and what they're going to be doing for $50,000? Are you saying that the administrative cost per time, if we kept it in the county, which I suspect most of it's being done anyways, is going to add up to $50,000 in time?
So we requested, and this legislature approved in our budget request for this year, additional staff to administer the funding that we already have. And so there is a staff position that we are adding in order to administer this program to date. And so, you know, I think that supports the argument that there is an additional administrative overhead in delivering what amounts to probably 30 grants, collecting the receipts, the administration of all of that process for disbursement of the funds, for tracking the required metrics for the awardees. There is an administrative overhead to that work. And what I would anticipate would happen if that is, you know, money that is allocated to USITA is that USITA would use that for contracts with professionals in order to complete that work, namely either financial professionals to help with the administration of the reimbursement process, with legal professionals in order to help with contracts, and perhaps with contracted staff to help with the actual delivery of the program.
You foresee them spending $50,000 to go contract out. So we're paying them to be the middleman. And then they'll go and why don't we save a little bit of money and just contract that ourselves. I actually think we should just do it ourselves. And like I said, we have three staff and we're running out of money, three staff that we just created. Do you, yes or no, do you think it's going to cost $50,000 to provide that service?
I do. I believe that 5% overhead rate is a minimal amount for the kinds of services that need to be provided to support.
With us already doing so much though. You think there's $50,000 worth of work you're not doing. You really believe that? I don't believe it. That's why I put the amendment up.
Sure. No, I understand that, but I do believe that.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I heard Mr. Maloney's amendment. I didn't hear who seconded it. Oh, you're muted.
I don't think it has been seconded yet.
I apologize.
So is there a second on Legislator Maloney's request to move that $50,000 into the program? Okay. So Legislator Maloney, seeing no second, we're going to go on to Resolution 32 as is. And if there's any further discussion on that. Okay, so I'll call the vote. All those in favor of Resolution 32, which is approving execution of a contract for $1 million entered into the county for USITA, Department of Finance, signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Opposed.
Okay, thank you very much. We're going to move on to Resolution number 107, which is appointing a legislative representative to the Ulster County Cooperative Extension Board. Sorry, I was supposed to do that earlier. I apologize. We just have a lot of heavy stuff here tonight. Thank you for waiting. I'll accept the motion for 107.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
Any discussion on 107? Okay, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Legislator Hewitt, you have to be on screen to vote. Sorry. Aye. Thank you. All those.
Am I allowed to vote? Because I'm the one that's. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm voting for myself. Thank you.
That's fine. There's no financial reward for you, so you're able to vote for yourself here. Right. So, well, congratulations. All those opposed? All right, thank you. And congratulations, Legislator Sperry. Resolution 108, we already voted on. Resolution 131, which is establishing a capital project number 624 at SUNY Ulster Children's Center renovations and amending the 2022 to 2027 capital fund budget for SUNY Ulster. Is there a representative from the college here tonight?
I believe Jamie's
here.
Yes, okay. I am.
Hi, Jamie. Would you mind giving us a little background on this project?
Sure.
Thank you.
So this is our children's center. It's located on our campus here. It serves children ages infant all the way up to pre-K. It's operated right on campus in a separate building next to our Senate gym. The building is, you know, was built in the 80s. It is in need of repair and updating. This work will be for the design component to do an exterior envelope for the children's center that will include new decking specs for that, and also looking at new insulation to really improve the energy efficiencies of the building. Again, this at this point is going for design. When we come back for construction, we'll have obviously much more detail on the construction components.
Well, thank you. Is there any questions on 131? Okay, I'll accept the motion.
Motion.
You have that, Herb and Tom. All right, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Resolution number 133, authorizing the execution of a lease agreement with the Ulster County Economic Development Alliance Incorporated for space at the Enterprise West facility located in the Town of Ulster, Department of Public Works, Buildings and Grounds. I'll accept the motion for discussion. Legislator Criswell, second. I'll second it myself.
I had a quick question, sir, if I may. So I really looked through the documents, but I just want to make sure this is clear. This is a $1 lease, correct?
Yes.
No hidden cost anywhere, $1. Okay. I just wanted to make sure. Thank you.
And I think, Tim, if you want to just give a little background on what this is and explain to the legislators so they have a better understanding, this is not a permanent solution.
Yep. And, you know, we've for a while had DPW using some of the space in Enterprise West for overflow storage. And this basically just codifies that we are working diligently towards redevelopment of the site in partnership with Natural Resources. iPark 87 expect to be discussing with the UCEDA board possible lease or sale options for the property. And so we're just making sure that the use that DPW needs for a short term here is properly handled on a legal basis so that when we make any future transaction, there is this lease in place.
Thank you.
Sorry, may I ask one more question,
sir? Absolutely.
Again, just with the history of money asks for this property, I just want to make sure that in this lease, if there's any issues with the property, are we then held accountable for that, that we would have to then cough up the money for any repairs or damages or anything like that?
Only to the extent that they're tenant improvements. And so if DPW decided they needed, you know, ventilation or something, there may be some obligation there, but that's not contemplated right now. And, you know, I don't expect that there's anything there. There is responsibility for their proportion of the utility bills and common area maintenance, that kind of stuff that will, you know, ultimately be determined by, you know, final landlord and building manager as that gets settled. But you know, for overall building improvements or, you know, routine maintenance of the building as a whole, those will not be solely on DPW's shoulders.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Okay, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Opposed.
So we have Legislator Maloney, and that's it, just Legislator Maloney opposed? Okay, we're going on to resolution number 133, authorizing the execution of a lease agreement with the Ulster County Economic Development. I'm sorry, I just read that one. Thank you. 134, reappointing member to the Ulster County Planning Board, Village of Ellenville. Anyone want to make a motion?
Make the motion.
Okay, second. Second, Legislator Litz. Okay, all those in favor? Aye. All those opposed? Great, thank you. Resolution 135 is appointing a member and alternate to the Ulster County Planning Board for the town of Shawangum. All those in favor? No, sorry, thank you. And seconded by Legislator Corcoran. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Great, thank you. 136 is reappointing a member and alternate to the Ulster County Planning Board for the town of Ulster.
Motion.
So moved.
All those in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? Thank you. 137 is setting a public hearing on the sale and or transfer of three easements across county-owned property, being a portion of the former Ulster and Delaware Railroad bed property located in the city of Kingston to the Ulster County Housing Development Corporation, a local development corporation for the purpose of affordable housing and development. So for those new people who are new on the committee, I'm going to ask Planner Doyle to give a brief background on this after I'm done. But this is basically to give an easement across the county-owned railroad tracks for a proposed senior housing complex that's going to go behind, whatever is it now, behind the former Holiday Inn, whatever it's called now, out on Washington Avenue there off of Hurley.
I'll move it for discussion.
Okay, any seconds?
I'll second that.
Okay. And does anyone
have... I think it's the Best Western, isn't it?
Best Western. Thank you very much, Senator Criswell. Abe would kill me if I didn't have that right. So I don't know. Does anyone have any questions? Or do we even need Planner Doyle to give us background on this, or would you like to hear it for the newer legislators, especially what this is about? Because this has been in front of us for quite some time. This has been a very long term project that's had quite a few delays on the city side, and they finally have come to some resolution. They have a neg deck secret review, so I think it's time that they wanted to move forward. Let's say Sperry, would you like to hear Planner Doyle? Yeah, okay. Dennis, would you mind giving us a few minutes on it?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just really quickly, I think that the chairman explained it very succinctly, and I don't know whether I want to add too much to it. It's the O&W Railroad. It does sit behind the Best Western. It will have access across our property and then it will run out to Hurley Avenue. The reason there's three easements is one is for construction purposes. It's a temporary easement. The other one is for access, and the third one is for utilities. It's a 50-foot easement. The reason we have to go through this process is the surplusing process, and once it's surplus, then we would go through an appraisal process in order to move that to the development, to that Housing Development Corporation. The chairman did mention the fact that the City of Kingston has now issued a revised, slightly revised defining under SEAKER, so that the county, if the county decides to go ahead and transfer the property, we can rely on the findings of the State Environmental Quality Review Act from the City of Kingston. And that's where we had a public hearing, I think, in 2017. There's been some time that's passed. The thought from the attorneys where we should go back and have another public hearing. We've had numerous requests to get this done from the Housing Development Corporation, in order to, I'm sorry, the Hudson Valley Housing Development Fund Corporation to do that. So here's where we are tonight. After that, you would be coming back. You would see a resolution for us after the public hearing. Should you decide to move ahead, you'd see a resolution to surplus the property to the development corporation. And then from there, effectively move it into a sale with a payment back to the county.
So the only question that comes to my mind is that we have a lease agreement on that piece of property with the Catskill Mountain Railroad at this point, don't we? And does that impact that in any way? Do they also have to agree as the people that have a lease against that property?
No, they don't. And they've reached out. We've reached out to CMRR, and they've looked at this from a safety standpoint to get across the operating railroad tracks. There may be a question, and that's one of the things we're exploring, is allowing another crossing across the railroad tracks may require an administrative hearing from New York State Department of Transportation.
Okay, thank you. And does that mean then if that doesn't pass, then is our easement null and void if the state grant them the right?
The administrative hearing is generally pro forma. They look at the safety considerations with respect to that. So that was one of the things that we'd have to look at. But we're not expecting difficulties on that administrative hearing.
Okay, thank you. All right, are there any legislator leads?
Yeah, Dennis, I mean, we are selling an easement and transferring an easement. We're not selling the property. Is that correct?
Actually, we have an easement over the short answer is yes, that is correct.
Because we own the railroad.
That's correct.
Okay.
And we have also taken an easement over another, the O&W railroad that we own, that they own. We have an easement for trail purposes over that. We've just taken that easement, for the construction of the Kingston Rail Trail. But this is an easement across the Ulster and Delaware corridor. I may have misspoke earlier. I apologize for that.
Thank you. Is there any other questions or comments? Legislator Sperry?
I just wanted to ask, is it going to affect or impact the access to the bike trail from that area?
The engineers for the trail have looked at the proposed easement across our trail, and we've already granted that easement across the trail as part of the project work. So this easement does not, and the easement that we granted them in order to make sure that we got it on the O&W was looked at in terms of the safety of that crossing.
Okay. Hey, anything else? All right. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you. And then I believe this is the last one. Resolution number 138, authorizing the chair to an intermunicipal agreement with various municipalities for the operation of the Summer Youth Employment Program, Gun Violence Prevention Initiative, and the Young Adult Employment Program. I'll accept the motion.
Move that for discussion.
I will second it. Any discussion? I like the addition of the Gun Violence Program. I think that's new this year, right? And I'm really looking forward to seeing that fruition. Ms. Williams, do you have anything you'd like to add to this or no?
Well, thank you, yeah. Chairman Cahill. This is our really annual work agreement for our summer youth employment program for young people between the ages of 16 and 24. The addition is for the gun violence prevention initiative, which was additional funding that was given to our department to focus on the Ellenville and Kingston area for the young adult employment. And then of course the young adult employment program is for those young people who are out of school and in need of work experiences. This is a very typical work agreement that we do with most of our sites. This is just sort of an extended version for those intermunicipal entities like county parks, like the libraries. And so it was deemed necessary to have a separate agreement for them that went a little above and beyond our normal worksite agreement.
Thank you. Any other comments, discussion on the resolution? Legislator Litz?
Yes, through the chair, what will be the hourly wage typical for that summer program?
This year, the summer youth employment hourly rate will be $14 an hour.
I hope you realize that in Ulster County, it has to be $15 an hour.
I will have to get back to you. There is an exception for the summer youth employment program. That they are not required to be at the level of the adults. But I will get back to the legislature to confirm that.
Thank you. Anyone else have any comment or question? Okay, I'll call the vote then. All those in favor? Aye.
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 All those opposed? Okay, so the resolution passes. Thank you very much. So we have old business and new business. And so for the old business, we have the IDA interviews for the applicants for the IDA. And I think we're still accepting questions, compiling the questions that we got back from the legislature, from various legislators to send out to the candidates to answer prior to scheduling the interviews. And then what we really need to do in this meeting, I think tonight, is come to an agreement on what's the best solution for scheduling those interviews. We have, 23, 24, Clerk Cantillo?
24, I believe, right now.
24. So if we, say, give a minimum of 20 minutes to each one, that is a very long day, if we give ourselves some breaks in there. So what I'm going
to recommend... Chair, you think 20 minutes? I mean, to go over something like the IDA, I know we'll do a second round of interviews,
but I have a feeling...
The 20 minutes just seem, and I know there's a lot of people, but I just feel like maybe the process should go on longer and have an initial 20 minutes. I'm just telling you to go over the IDA. I mean, that could be two questions.
No, I understand.
One question for some of the sitting.
So just let me finish my point, Legislator Maloney, and that might help you a little bit. So what I was going to suggest is that we expand the interview over more than one day, 2 days, 3 days, whatever it takes, because I don't believe that we're going to get through these in 20 minutes each. That's what we did last time. But with 24 people, that's 12 hours of interview if we only give 30 minutes, right? So we're going to be there for a while interviewing these candidates. Some of them we may get through quicker. Some of them we may not interview at all. They may not agree to be interviewed. So what I'm going to suggest is that we do it in afternoons and at least one weekend day, maybe two weekend days. And so that's going to take a little bit of scheduling from the folks on this committee and also from the legislature as a whole, who we will invite to participate in these interviews and, ask the questions that are on their minds at the time. This is going to be a very open thing, just like it was 2 years ago, where every legislator was invited, had an opportunity to ask questions and participate. And we're going to do the same thing this time. We have a lot more candidates, and I think we're going to have a lot more questions this time than we had the last time. So I'm going to just take some suggestions from you guys. As I said from the beginning, this process could use a lot of hands helping it out. So whatever you guys want to contribute here would be very helpful to us trying to schedule these interviews. Because right now, what I'm looking at are minimally, you know, 3 afternoons and probably 2 weekend days right now. And so we're going to do that. That means some people are going to make it, some people aren't going to make it. So we're just going to have to figure it out. And of course, that also means that, with the number of candidates, we're probably delaying when we will actually appoint these new members by at least a month, probably looking at a May vote for these right now. By the time we get done with everything. So we have time to spread out the interviews. So what are you thinking? Okay. So if
no one... process.
Yeah, okay. Legislator Hewitt?
I was just wondering if there is a process for paring it down, or do we have to interview everyone who applied?
Well, so right now what we requested in the original ask was that the applicants supply a resume or some sort of documentation, you know, to explain their background, but some of them didn't. And the ones that didn't, we will not be asking to interview. We requested it on the initial one, then we sent a follow-up request for a resume, and they, again, didn't supply it. Is that correct, Liz, Clerk Cantillo? We had a few that didn't.
I think we have one right now. I think we got from almost everybody has some kind of information.
Okay, so we have one person who we won't be interviewing, so it's 23.
You know, Chair, I had a little bit of an issue with that. I talked to some very successful people that don't have resumes. There are retired people that haven't updated their resume in 30 years. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, I had called Fawn and was a little upset seeing that email, and it sounded like some people gave some pretty good descriptions of their work history, but it wasn't in quote resume form, and they received that email. I thought that was a mistake. Our own clerk, who's very talented and has a wonderful resume, I believe theoretical resume, doesn't have a physical resume. So I don't know if we want to, I don't know. It wouldn't have been something I would have X somebody out for not sending a resume. I think every person in this county should deserve to be interviewed, but
yeah,
I'm a legislator. I don't have a resume. I mean, I guess if I wanted to be on the IDA, I'd have to make one up, but
exactly
that's what you're asking for.
So there's a reason for that. And I think that, you know, there's we're trying to get a diverse background of people on that from different areas of the community, different occupations, different geographic areas. And, you know, seeing what their backgrounds are, what their education levels are very important. They are to me anyway. And I just think that in this day and age, if you're applying for a job or an interview, a position anywhere, and you're not supplying a resume.
Then for elected officials, the people that appoint them. But just to clarify, you did end up accepting something that wasn't necessarily in resume form, but a history. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. We didn't reject them out of hand because we don't have a quote unquote resume. We just have people that it just basically said, I want to be on the IDA or something like that. You know, I mean, and that's just not enough. Right. We need to have some background, and that's that. And so 23 of the 24 applicants found that it wasn't too much of a burden. So I think we're OK with that decision. So back to the scheduling.
Can I follow up on something that Legislator Hewitt was saying? I don't know if you were alluding to this, but is there a way we could have a smaller committee do sort of a first round cut and bring it down so that it becomes a more reasonable amount of people to actually interview? I mean, that happens in job searches all the time.
Yeah, I hear you. So I'm not going to rule with an iron fist here because I personally believe that, you know, there are very legitimate reasons for legislators who are not on this committee, so to speak. Because, Peter, what I would think would be that, yeah, our committee could pare it down and then present a larger group to the entire legislature. Sure, right? But I know for a fact that there are several legislators on the legislature right now who would very much like to have the conversations with the candidates for the IDA, especially the folks that were on there last term who are looking to be put back on again. They have very specific questions that they want to ask. that are not members of this committee. And I for one, feel like it's very important that, you know, since the legislature will be voting on them as a whole, right, that we give the legislature an opportunity to ask questions at that point, because guess what? They may not make it out of that round, right, of the initial group of interviews based on what, you know, the legislators feel at that point, right? Legislator Litz?
Yeah, no, to Peter's question, we are that committee. Right. There'll be other legislators that participate, but the seven of us will be the only ones that will be ranking them. So we are that committee that pairs it down, that goes forward.
Right. Just to give an indication, right, the last time we did this, we had the same scenario where Herb was vice chair of the committee at the time, and we opened it up to everybody again, and we got maybe two or three legislators occasionally on our interviews. We interviewed, we spent a full Saturday and a couple other times on that group. And I don't think, you know, people were in and out. Some members of the committee were in and out of the interviews. Some legislators popped in and left, you know, but it was not a groundswell of, you know, 20 legislators sitting there asking questions. It was really just this committee and a couple of other legislators. But I do expect that we will have a little bit more participation this time, quite honestly, right?
Times have changed, Brian.
Yeah. Yeah, and rightfully so, I think, right? You know, there's some questions that have to be answered, I believe, right? So I think what I'll do then is go ahead and I'll get with Fawn, and we'll try and propose a schedule, and then we'll send it back to the committee. And then the committee can then, you know, let us know your availability for that, the dates that we propose. And hopefully we can get a majority of people to agree to the dates that we have. Because the longer this drags out, the longer it'll be, you know. So let's say to Erner.
Thank you, Chair Cahill. May I ask the committee to consider, if you do need to conduct interviews on the weekend, to have some on each of Saturday and Sunday for folks who observe religious holidays on those days, so that they can make one or the other?
Yeah, so we will. Well, first, I can promise you that we won't be scheduling them on any religious holidays, okay? And typically, they would be during the day. And we would make sure that we didn't interfere with any kind of religious activity, as far as I can tell. We'll make sure of that. Thank you. So there was something I wanted to bring up under new business that I can't think of right now. I didn't write it down. It wasn't that big of a deal, but we'll get to it next month, I guess. Anything else anyone wants to talk about tonight before we accept a motion for adjournment? All right.
Then I will make that motion, Mr. Chairman.
All right. And seconded by Legislator Sperry. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye. Be safe.
Post.
Stay healthy. Take care.
Thank you all again for a very good meeting. I appreciate the feedback and the participation. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.